This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Today, our guest is Drew Sharp from the Detroit Free Press. We're going to talk a lot of Penn State today. What should happen to Penn State? Should the Big Ten be involved? A new edict has just came down. Jim Delaney, they're talking about giving Jim Delaney the power to fire coaches in the Big Ten. We'll talk about that and other things with our guest, Drew Sharp, right here on AM 870. Drew, how you doing, buddy?
How you doing today?
Okay. Hey, I was interested, but it caught me by surprise when I heard the Big Ten is considering giving Jim Delaney the power to fire coaches. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's kind of overstepping the boundaries of the conference commissioner. I mean, that should be a university president's call.
Yes.
And I'm a little amazed that the university presidents would want to pass the buck in a situation like that and give such unilateral power to the conference commissioner. The commissioners, I believe, works for the university president. So, you know, I have a hard time believing that the conference would approve something like that. It just seems to be a cop-out for me, for the university presidents. That's their responsibility, to hire, the hiring and firing, especially the firing of their head coaches when they feel they have breached the code of ethics of the university, of the conference, of the NCAA. That should fall upon the university president. They're the ones who are supposedly, in theory, have the last say at the university. Of course, Earl, you and I both know that with the importance of sports, that's not necessarily the case at most places.
And yes, since they want to give that to Delaney, we have to assume because of everything that's happened at Penn State, they want to take it out of the university's hands or the president's hand, who would have a very difficult time firing or getting rid of any coach, and give it to the commissioner, basically.
It doesn't make sense. But, again, that doesn't make sense. You're basically then the university president. Again, the commissioner works for the university presidents. So they're basically saying, well, we can't fire, so we're going to have your employee of ours have the final say in whether or not our head coach gets hired or fired. Again, that's a cop-out in university president, and that's supposed to be their responsibility.
Yes, that's true. It'll be interesting to see if it plays out. Do you think that he'll actually get that power, that they'll give it to him?
I don't think so. I don't see that happening. It seems to be in conflict with what is supposed to be the primary responsibility of the university presidents, of the chancellors. They are the ones who have the final say in situations like this, and it just seems cowardly on the university president's part to try and push some of that authority on to someone else. So I have a hard time believing that's going to happen. But I think what this is setting up, what is setting up the Big Ten for, I think, Earl, is that you're going to see them perhaps play a very aggressive role in how what type of punishments get handed down as far as Penn State's concerned.
Yes. Now, when we talk about Penn State, do you see the Big Ten or the NC2 or maybe both entities having some say-so on what happens to Penn State?
It's going to be similar to every other investigation we've seen involving the conference and the NCAA. They're going to expect the university to police itself first and foremost. And this is what we understand, that Penn State will be submitting a report, or not necessarily a report, let me rephrase that. There are some questions that the NCAA submitted to Penn State a couple months ago, and Penn State said we can't provide those answers until the Free Commission report was done. That report was concluded and released last Thursday. So now, from what I understand, it's just a matter of days when Penn State will formally answer those questions to the NCAA. And one of those questions is basically, did the university president, the football coach, and the athletic director, top administrative officials, did they know of the Jerry Sandusky allegation in 2001 and basically did nothing to try and report it, police it, monitor it? If that's the case, then I would think the NCAA then will give them a formal letter of inquiry like we've seen in past investigations, charging them with basically a lack of institutional control, which is the most serious offense that a university can have.
And of course, we discussed earlier what some of those things would do. What happened to Penn State? What do you see basically happening out of that?
Death penalty is not going to happen. I mean, a lot of people want blood. I want blood. I'm still pissed off that this whole thing was allowed to happen. And there's a lot of anger still, and the emotions are very raw. It's understandable. But, you know, we need to take a step back and try to look at it as objectively and analytically as possible. The NCAA rules regarding the death penalty are very strict and very precise. They only apply to programs that are repeat offenders. As a repeat offender, a program that has been guilty of major violations in the past and was put on probation. And if they broke the terms of that probation, then they could face the death penalty. It's similar to if someone got convicted of a minor crime and was put on probation for 2 years. And the stipulation of the probation is, if you don't keep your nose clean those 2 years, you can go to jail next time for violating the terms of the probation. We saw that happen with the Michigan football player, you know, with the DUI a year ago. So it's kind of along those same lines. The death penalty, and even though Mark Emmert, the NCAA president, said on PBS a couple of days ago that all options are on the table, I think he's just doing that just to cover all of his bases publicly, because he knows people are livid right now, and they want they just don't want your standard probation, bowl bans. They want blood, you know, because of what happened at Penn State. So I think he's saying that just to appease the torch and pitchfork crowd out there and just say, look, everything's on the table, but, you know, trust me on this one. Earl, you and I both know how the NCAA operates. We've covered enough of their investigations over our careers here. The death penalty is not going to be a reasonable option in policing Penn State, in punishing Penn State.
Yes, that seems like that won't happen. So what do you think could actually happen to them? I mean, you know, we live in a society, as you just mentioned, we love to kick a dog when he's down. If you get down, we want people over there kicking you, stomping you, shoving dirt in your face. Like you say, we should step back and take a look. You know, it's hard to believe that would actually happen, because we see so much people trying to kick the dog when he's down. So what do you think is really going to happen with Penn State?
Well, I think what can happen, what should happen. And you know, I'm trying to talk to people in the Big Ten to get some clarification on this, because I'm curious as to whether or not with the contract that all the universities have with the conference in regards to the money that comes from the Big Ten network, whether or not if there's a codicil in there that says if a university is deemed to be guilty of a serious breach of moral ethics, could they be forced to sacrifice some of the money that, you know, some of their share. Now, we know that runs into the millions annually. And I think that's something that needs to be seriously looked at if the Big Ten can do that. Say, for argument's sake, that each school gets $20-25 million a year from the Big Ten. I'm just throwing that number out there. That might be too small, you know. But, you know, you say that for 2 years, they do not get a dime, not one penny of the money that comes from the network. You do that. Now, they're going to be banned from the bowls. That's an obvious one. But you can't ban them from television, because it's not fair to the other programs in the conference who, you know, it will affect their schedule as well. And that's why maybe the TV penalty could be they do not get any revenue from the Big Ten network for a specific period. There are a lot of options out there. There's a way you can devastate this program without killing it. And I think that's the way it should be handled.
Yes, and if we see that, we know if they do that, in a way, it could definitely hurt the program. But let's say they do tendency to do that. That Penn State, they could always, as you know, they have ways of getting around rules and such in football. Let's say if they take their money, there could be a way they get their money back through the back door
It's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible, but I think people are going to be watching this so closely as to how the NCAA and the Big Ten handles this, because it's, you know, and this playoff resulted, Earl, because of what, at least the excuses that the commissioners gave, was that the will of the public pretty much overcame the BCS. Well, if that's true with a stupid playoff, then can you imagine what the will of the public in demanding justice be served here for a football program that ran out of control? So they just can't sit back there and say, well, you know what? It was a terrible thing that these people did. We'll just let the criminal courts take care of it as far as the athletic director and the vice president and potentially the ex-university president. The NCAA and the Big Ten cannot afford to just toss it off in the criminal courts. They can't do that. They're going to have to do something and make it clear to everyone watching them very closely right now that this thing is a result of a football culture that has gotten out of control, completely out of whack. And we have to look at this from a serious standpoint that we have to make sure these universities understand that although football is very important financially, culturally to the university, nothing is more important than ethical integrity. And if you don't have that, then the Big Ten is nothing.
Yes, I mean, we'll have to look at that whole thing. But do you think that if we look at that integrity and that, you know, we can change basically the culture of football? I mean, we see how people really hold these coaches to such a high standard. You know, they make them basically into gods, you know, out here. So can we change it all, change the whole culture of how we treat the coaches, especially in college football?
The only way you can change it, Earl, will be to shut down the entire sport for 2 years. The entire sport. Not just one school, the entire sport. And have people actually go through their lives knowing that, oh, my goodness, I got that fired up about a stupid football game. and that's never going to happen. That's never going to happen, but that's the only way. And I think that's one reason why you see so many people, the media, fans right now, who are just screaming for blood on this one with Penn State. Because I think in some ways it might ease their consciences a little bit by, okay, we're going to take a moral stand with Penn State, and that will forgive the fact that we are as much responsible for the leadership at Penn State for allowing football to overcome common sense and decent moral values, just basic moral values. We in the media, myself included, fans, we're all responsible for this to a certain extent. And if we really want to change the culture, that requires shutting the whole thing down, for a year or two, and have everyone just sit back and reevaluate, okay, was it really that important to obsess as much as we do over a stupid football game?
Well, you know, Drew, there's so much money involved in this and football.
And, Earl, again, this is the reason why. The money, when you put more money into college football, it's only going to lead to more corruption. This is the hypocrisy of this whole thing. When people screaming the loudest for to get rid of the BCS and have an actual playoff because of all the money in there, then, you know what, you're going to produce more Penn States. I mean, not to this extent with a pedophile, but I'm saying you're going to produce more Penn States from the standpoint that university figures are going to just look, take a blind eye to things that are going wrong within institutionally to protect the football program and protect the investment that the football program has become because the playoffs are going to do this. You can't have it both ways. If you want more playoffs and the money that comes with it, there's going to be more corruption. there's no getting around that.
Okay. Well, Drew, hang on with you. I want to get back with you. We're going to take a little pause right now. We'll come back. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
The Midwest is sweltering through what could be the worst drought in a generation. And it's not just farmers feeling parched. It's everyone who makes a living in the Corn Belt. I'm Jennifer Ludden. Drought's long reach. Plus NPR's Keith Woods on awkward conversations about race and why even the best of us mess up sometimes. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
We have widespread showers and thunderstorms in the forecast. Today's high, 87. Tonight will be mostly cloudy with scattered rain and thunderstorms and a low of 61. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and breezy with a high of 82. Sunny with a high in the mid-80s on Saturday. I'm Scott Pohl.
Give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.com. PennStateAndTheDetroitFreePress.org. Our guest this afternoon, Drew Sharp from the Detroit Free Press. We're talking about Penn State and some of the problems going around in Penn State and with college football. In all honesty, if you want to give us a call, talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Drew, you know, another thing that we've talked about in the past, along with the with all the money that's involved, and, you know, like you say, maybe they should shut it down for a while. Probably won't happen because there's so much money involved. So, you know, I don't think we can really, in all honesty, look at that because there's that much money involved and the schools make so much money. I think they'd be very reluctant to shut it down at all. They might penalize someone, but when you penalize one, that one team, you also penalize the other teams. So I don't know, how can you shut it down without hurting some of the other teams?
The whole, cut down the whole shebang?
Yeah.
Oh, like I said before, it's unrealistic. It's not going to happen, but that's the only way you can exact any type of change, any type of cultural change to everyone involved, is to take it away from everybody and then let them sit there and realize how trivial this really is. That, I mean, people make money off of it. There's no question about that, and that's why you'll never get shut down. But it would take – that's the only way that you can make everyone realize, not just the people at Penn State, but everyone, that it's crazy to let a stupid game just consume your common sense and your decent sense of morality, just a basic decency. You know, so we're left to just do what the NCAA does – punish specific universities, specific cases. But that's not going to change. That's not going to change anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's just going to get worse with the more money that's coming in with the playoff in another couple years. It's just going to make the situation even worse.
Now, we've heard all this. It seems like it's pretty trivial now, but people want to take down paternal statue. How do you look at that? I mean, is that a trivial thing, or should they really take down? Does that really do anything if you just take a statue down?
It's ridiculous that people are debating about a statue.
Yeah.
Again, it's ridiculous. People are mad. I understand that. But come on, it doesn't matter whether or not a statue is there to honor the man, you know, because it should be another reminder to us that we are not comprised of marble, but of mortal flesh. We're going to make mistakes, you know, tragic mistakes in this case, you know, and in the case of Joe Paterno, his reputation is forever damaged. I can understand why his family is trying to, start their own investigation on this because his name, you know, God rest in peace, but his name has been forever tarnished. Whatever good things he has done, and he did quite a few, you know, in his 40-plus years of being a head coach, it's going to be primarily remembered for this. If he was still alive right now, Earl, I think the first line of his obituary would be disgraced Penn State head football coach. That would be the first word of it because of now how people see him. So, whether or not you take a statue down or not, it's not going to change that. Again, it might ease people's conscience a little bit, but you know that's not the most important thing right now.
Yes, and what overall, I mean, you know, we know how badly and how wrong what Jerry Sandusky did, but what should we still get out of it? What should people really get out of it? I mean, do they just want a pound of flesh, or what do you think they're just looking for?
Well, again, I think people want a pound of flesh to ease their own conscience because, you know, a lot of these people, like I said, media, fans, we are as much responsible for Penn State believing it could conceal something like this because it's all about protecting the investment that has become big-time college football.
You know, Drew...
And so that's why I do think that's why people are... You know, are feverishly looking for ways to punish Penn State. Part of that, but a big part of that, is because just to kind of ease their own minds to a certain extent.
You know, Drew, when we were on the phone earlier, we talked about, how football has got out of control. I mean, I don't think we'll ever see, in all honesty, again, a coach coaching 40 years. Because if you coach that long, you're just going to get a lot of power. It's not going to be handed to you, but it'll be assumed that you're powerful and everything will be assumed, It's highly unlikely, again, we'll ever see a coach, coach 20 years maybe, or 30 years for sure at any university.
Yeah, that's not going to happen any longer. It's just impossible to expect that. And Joe Paterno was the most influential person in the entire Commonwealth of Pennsylvania,
yes.
Not just the Pennsylvania State University. You know, and I think everyone realized that. This idea that that he had a chain of command, perhaps officially, you know, you could argue that, you know, he reported to the athletic director, who reported to the university president, but everyone knows. We knew this back in November when the allegations first came to public light, that nothing happens without Joe Paterno knowing about it. And he's gonna wield a tremendous amount of influence as to what type of action happens upon finding out about what happened with Sandusky. So this idea that he's only a football coach, and you know he went through the proper channels. No one believed that in November. No one believes that now. But the thing is, though, again, people can say, well, football coaches can't be that powerful. Yeah, we know that. Common sense should tell you. Yes, football coach should not be the most influential person at a major university. But reality, because of all the money involved and the more money that's going to be involved, makes that impossible. So how do you change things? You're not going to change things. The situation is only going to get worse.
Yes, and that'll be tragic if it does get worse. As we know, things do get worse. I mean, it's funny how things have gotten worse. A lot of time, we after events would happen, well, it can't get any worse. And then, lo and behold, a few years later, something will happen that will make this event seem.
Look, Earl, look at the last 3 years in college football with all the scandals.
Yes.
After the USC scandal, you know, then mm-hmm. came Ohio State, which was in some respects worse than USC just because of the sheer number of offenses. And then after Ohio State, Miami, you know, where you had a rogue booster out there, and then say still looking into that. And then just to, just you can't imagine how much worse this one is, Penn State. And we keep thinking, like you said, it can't get any worse. There can't be anything out there that'll stun us, shock us any more than what we've already seen in college football, but there's always more.
Yes, you know, it's amazing that how we assume that the big schools, a lot of these big schools are the ones that are getting in trouble. I mean, we stomp on the small schools when they do something, and yet the big schools have been doing stuff for years and been able to get away with it. And, you know, will we start really taking a hardcore look at these big schools, these big institutions that basically get away with murder a lot of times?
Well, I mean, we say that facetiously,
yes.
But at what point does that really happen? Where
yeah.
someone, you hate to think that we even get to that point, but who knows? When you're involving this much money, you are opening the door to even further corruption. And media and fans need to realize this. They need to realize this. And I think a lot of us want to just look upon this Penn State thing as an isolated episode.
Right. Mm-hmm.
From the fact that it involved a pedophile. Yeah, I sincerely praise the God that this is an isolated incident. But the other side of the story about the institutional breakdown in control, there's nothing isolated about that. There's nothing isolated about that. And that situation is just going to get worse with other universities.
And that's the tragic thing. We've talked so much about these things, and especially about the Penn State thing in the last month or so. And you know, it's finally what we looks like. It finally the NC2A is going to do something. At first, I was even thinking that maybe the NC2A wouldn't do anything. The courts would handle it, and that would be it. But it does look like finally the NC2A is going to get involved. And like you say, basically because of such a outcry from all the public out there. The public really wants blood, and I think they're going to get some blood in this case.
Oh, yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. they're acting because of, there's been such a strong public outcry. And, again, that's understandable.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
You're mad about this. I'm mad mm-hmm. about this. Everyone's livid. You know, it's unfathomable that a university could allow this to happen for as long as it did. You cannot wrap yourself around that. You just cannot. But what you can wrap yourself around is that this is another example of how big-time sports compromises integrity, institutional integrity at a university. And these are people that are supposed to, their main responsibility is supposed to protect the academic and moral integrity of that university community. That's their number one responsibility. and they failed miserably at Penn State. But this idea that that can't happen elsewhere, no, it's going to happen worse. With more money getting involved with the playoffs, it's going to happen again at major schools. Not to the extent with the pedophile, I hope, you know, but as far as the attitude, the institutional attitude to protect and conceal for the sake of protecting the millions of dollars that come into football, that's not going away.
Yes, that's the other thing we've talked about for years. How with the institutions and how they they cover things up, and I guess I hate to say it, but it looks like it's going to continue. That it just seems like the colleges never learn. Every time they cover something up, it always comes out, but they just never seem to get that lesson.
Right, it always happens. I mean, it's again we learned this from the Watergate. It's basic conspiracy 101, in that it's not so much the crime, it's the concealment of it that gets you in the most trouble usually. You know, if it's a minor thing, I won't say a minor thing, but you're better off when you recognize a problem has occurred to take care of it. And Earl, this is what the NCAA defines as institutional control.
Yes.
The NCAA does not expect universities to prevent problems from happening. They know it's going to happen. When you're dealing with that many student athletes, it's going to happen. But what they define control as is that when you learn of a problem, you address it immediately. You identify it, you report it, you investigate it. I say you submit a self-imposed sanction. Turn to the NCAA, and the NCAA goes, good job. Next case. So this is why it's going to be imperative that Penn State take the lead in this and punish itself harder than what people may think. That's the first step, and I think we might know a little bit more about this in the next week.
You know, Drew, I know you and I have both done a lot of studying on college football history and the history of college football. You know, if you go back to the 30s, they were such a tremendous. They made so many mistakes even back then, and I'm not sure if they ever dealt with it the right way. I think they sort of sugarcoated, at least my opinion, they sugarcoated a lot of the things that was happening back in the 30s and 40s. But they've done that year constantly, time after time after time. They just sort of cover it up, touch it a little bit. But we've never seen a full regression, a full look at. Maybe this situation will really take a very, very hard look at, instead of just want to take the money and run and just look at it for a little bit briefly as, we just did made a little mistake. But hopefully this one, something will really substantially happen.
I'm not holding up my breath waiting for that to happen, though.
Yes.
I'm not, maybe that's just the cynic in me of being a sports writer for almost 30 years, that you just know how things play itself out. Follow the money. That's all you need to do. That will tell you how things are going to work out. When it's all about the cash and getting as much cash as possible, then, like I said, common sense or doing the right thing, for the most part, that gets tossed out the window. And you're going to see this again. I mean, people will, after, Penn State gets its sanctions, self-imposed, and then the NCAA and the Big Ten, they come in there as well. People will be happy that they exacted their pound of flesh, but bottom line is nothing's going to change.
Yeah.
We're going to go back to still obsessing over this sport and allowing, it consume what should be a university's number one responsibility.
And it should, but we know, like you say, the university should do the moral thing and do what's right and everything. And we know a lot of that, it won't happen. That's the tragedy. They'll say they're going to do all the right things. That's the thing with colleges that just bothered me over the years. We get a lot of lip service from colleges and what they're going to do. But very rarely do they actually do it. But they give us a lot of lip service year in and year out.
Yeah. I mean, again, this is why, people complain, how come you guys in the media are so negative at times? Why can't you just let us have fun with this? Well, if you want to sit around with your eyes closed and just, cheer your team on, knowing full well that, again, you're contributing to the continued corruption of this sport, and it's going to create more and more of these problems that's fine. But this is the reason why people like me have become such hard-nosed cynics, you know, mm-hmm. over this time, where you just come to the point where you expect the worst. And unfortunately, you're not surprised when it happens.
Yes, and that's become a big problem. I mean, you know, we always see it. I know I always see it a lot. People always blame the media for everything. Like, we're the ones that cause the problem and do it, but it's our fault. If we don't, recognize it or see it right away, it's the media's fault. And people always seem to look at it. Everything is the media's fault in this society.
Of course. I mean, mm-hmm. you blame the messenger.
Yes.
You know, the message is what needs to be told, and people need to be reminded. But instead, you know, people only want to hear what makes them happy. They only want to be told what they already believe in. That's what they consider to be good journalism. They don't want to be told anything that might rock that boat a little bit. They don't want that.
Yes, and we see it all the time. I know I've kidded you a lot of times. You know, you get blasted when you criticize Michigan State. You get blasted when you criticize Michigan. People don't see that you criticize both sides. They only look at it from their standpoint, if they're a Michigan fan or a Michigan State fan.
Right.
You know, we always see that all the time. You know, and that's part of the problem. We just look at things in such a myopic way. We hardly ever see the big picture in this
Well, they never
situation.
Do. I mean, it's very insular in that. You mm-hmm. just... focus on what's immediately in front of you. And if you're a college football fan, you're usually a college football fan of a specific team. And the only coverage you care about is how your specific team is covered. Mm-hmm. And this is why Penn State fans were you know, very defensive, you know,
yes.
when these allegations first came out. Excuse me, and they were right mm-hmm. that, you know, let the criminal case take care of itself, you know. But this idea that how dare anyone suggest that Penn State might have covered this up. And, you know, come on now. You're being delusional. You know, you obviously have to know that with college football the way that it is, even at, you know, a paragon of integrity like Penn State once was, at least was perceived as,
yes.
it's possible it can happen there. If it can happen there, it can happen anywhere.
That's true. It certainly can. Hey, Drew, it's always good talking with you and covering sports. I mean, I'm glad we had a chance to talk a lot about this whole Penn State situation today. And hopefully we'll see what's going to happen. I mean, we don't know for sure yet, but we'll see what happens, especially with the Jim Delaney. Will they actually give him the power to become the overseer of college football in the Big Ten, where he can actually hire and fire coaches? That'll be something if we see that. And what the Big Ten will do if they do anything to Penn State, because that could upset the money cart. That's the thing with Penn State.
Yeah, and Earl, we'll see next week. You know, the conference meetings are in Chicago.
Yes.
And, you know, the Penn State situation is going to be the big elephant in the room that it's going to be discussed. Jim Delaney is going to have to discuss it. And these coaches are going to have to talk about it. And that's going to be a big point of discussion there. That in those couple of days, and this idea that you know the Big Ten just can't stand around and say, well, let the NCAA take care of it. No, if they want to be considered the moral center of college athletics as they promoted themselves,
yes, they have. They
for so long,
themselves. Yes.
Then here's a prime time opportunity for them to step forward and be proactive and do so. It might be drastic, and maybe that's what has to happen. But, again, next week in Chicago, it's going to be very interesting what is said and what people are going to talk about there.
Yes, for sure. Hey, Drew, always a good time and a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And we'll talk more during the season as, of course, eventually the topic will turn to football. Unfortunately, it will sooner or later, and we'll spend our time discussing the football later on. But good talking with you today, my friend, and I'll talk with you later on.
Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye. And that's Drew Sharp from the Detroit Free Press talking football with us right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870.
Twice now, George Zimmerman's attorney has asked for a new judge. In the first case, he saw a conflict of interest, and now he cites a reasonable fear that Zimmerman can't get a fair trial. I'm Jennifer Ludden. Judicial bias. What counts, what doesn't, how it varies from state to state, and why it matters. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870.
This is Scott Pohl with the weather forecast. Today's high, 87, with widespread showers and thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy for tonight with scattered showers and thunderstorms and a low of 61. Tomorrow's high, 82, windy and mostly sunny Friday. Sunny and a high of 85 expected Saturday.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527 or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. So give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Let's go to the phones. We've got Dennis on the line. Dennis, how you doing? I cut him off. So hopefully he'll call right back, Dennis. We just hit the wrong button there. So we'll get you on. Give us a call right here on AM 870 WKAR. We come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on AM 870. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on WKAR. As you know, we come your way each and every day. Love to talk to you. Love to hear from you right here on AM 870 WKAR in Lansing. Let's go back to the phones. I'll hit the right button this time. Hey, Dennis, how you doing?
I'm all right, man. You getting fat fingers?
Yeah, my fingers don't react as good as they used to.
Well, maybe you need to get those bifocals, man.
I may have to do that.
Yeah. Hey, Earl, mm-hmm. So much with that conversation you had with Drew that I've got to comment on. First thing is, Drew needs to stop this self-congratulatory attitude about the media being out there on the moral precipice and us fans on the back because we're just dimwits. We just want to go to the game and have fun, and we don't want them spoiling our fun. I mean, please, come on. Everything that went on at Penn State was aided and abetted by the local media. And B, you know, it's not as if Drew and other writers haven't had their own little issues with integrity and ethics themselves. So, you know, let's stop that. We're all part of the same interest, and I don't even want to go so far as to call it hypocrisy, because we're all interested in the game, and that makes the writers employable and gives them something to do that pays them salary. So, let's stop that. Now, you know, you're talking about de-emphasizing the sport, Earl, in college sports. I mean, that's happened before. University of Chicago used to be a huge Big Ten school.
Yeah.
Had a very strong football reputation, and people don't even know that University of Chicago was once the Big Ten. If you talk to modern fans, but they were a powerhouse, national powerhouse. Same thing with the Ivy League. They took a look around and decided they didn't want a part of the corruption and the hypocrisy, and they pulled back. And I don't see anything stopping people from doing that today. I mean, can't you see that that point?
You can see that point. It's hard to see some schools pulling back, say going dropping down to D2 or Division 2 or 3 or D1 or 2. Sure, that's a way to do it. You'd still be strong or popular, but you might become even more popular, just like Grand Valley State's popular at the D2 level. I mean, yes, you can do that. It certainly would help, probably, but, you know, we know schools are trying to make as much money as they can. As you know, that's the reality of it. And so...
There's another thing. I don't think it's just money with Penn State. I mean, you and Drew kept talking money, money, money. I don't think it was just money. I think it was reputation. I think it was that all-time winning game record that Paterno so urgently wanted. I think there was a combination of things that made people put their heads in the sand and ignore the problems that were going on or cover them up. I mean, for example, you had Paterno being acknowledged as a guy who built Penn State. And again, to our conversation the other day, I don't see how this could happen anywhere else, Earl. I don't know of another football coach who single-handedly built the university to the extent that Joe Paterno did. I don't know of another coach who had that type of on-campus power who can tell the trustees and his boss that he's not going anywhere. I think this is completely unique. And that canard that Sharp kept coming up that this could happen elsewhere. I just can't agree with that, Earl. Yeah, you're going to have scandals elsewhere. And yes, the money is a big temptation and a motivating factor for corruption. But what happened at Penn State, I think, is completely unique. I just, I just don't see that happening anywhere else. I just can't see that.
Well, I can't see it either. But, you know, unless I just don't see a coach, like I said earlier, you know, staying in one place 40 years like he has, or 30 years or something. We probably won't see a coach staying in one place for 30 years. But if that does happen, you can get that kind of power if you're allowed to stay in one place that long. You just, I don't know if you're not given that power, but it just sort of goes to your, you get that kind of power just staying in one place for so long. So I don't think we'll see it anymore just because nobody is. You know, people are ready to fire someone after they lose two or three games. So I don't think we'll see it again, in all honesty, just because of the way the game is played and the way coaches go in place, you know, here and there for more money and such. So, yeah, I doubt if we'll ever see that again. I mean,
but don't put the cart before the horse. The reason why he got to stay so long is because he had the power to say he was going to stay. Don't forget they tried to fire the man not too long ago.
Yeah, but he was still – he had been there 30-something years, though, when they tried that. That was over 34 years.
And in that 30-something years, he built the university's academic reputation.
He did.
There's no question about that.
Yeah, he did.
The football program took a sleepy little borough and built it into a national powerhouse.
Yeah.
Academically, socially, athletically. That was paternal, bro.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Not see that. And the last thing – cover-ups happen all the time, and many times they do succeed. Why do you think people want to cover things up?
Yeah.
The reason why we know when they fail is because they're brought to light. But I bet you right now there are programs who have had information come to them about some rule violations or even legal violations that they've decided it's prudent just to keep this in out and handle it, not let the media get involved or report, self-report to the NCAA authorities. Because they think it's more prudent and maybe "quote unquote" humane. I think cover-ups happen all the time in all aspects of life, and many times they succeed. And when they succeed, we never find out about them. We only find out about the ones that fail. So
right, that's true.
I don't think you should be so naive to say that cover-ups never work. Oh, they work. That's
yeah.
How people do it.
Yeah.
All right, Earl, I'll let you go, man.
Okay, we'll talk to you later, Dennis. Yeah, you know, you're definitely right about the cover-ups. I mean, I believe also cover-ups have happened plenty of times before. Sometimes we find out about them, and yes, and when it comes to light, you know, we make a big deal out of them when we find out about them. I think a lot of them do work. I know I've just talked with various athletes that have done things that have never come to light, and that always is going to happen. Maybe it won't happen as much more with all the camera phones out there and things, but you know, a lot of athletes used to get away with things all the time in the sports world, and of course that's changing slowly but surely. Hey, give us a call, talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. We know one thing that's it's been going on constantly, and it still hasn't, and who knows if we'll ever hear the end of this, and that's the Dwight Howard situation. I mean, will he ever find his team? Now there's rumor he might go to the Los Angeles Lakers. He might go there. He might sign a long-term extension there. Well, we don't know yet, but that's the one thing that we've heard constantly for the last few months. Probably going to hear more of that until he actually signs a contract or until actually a trade is consummated with Dwight Howard, and we'll hear that eventually. But that's another situation that, you know, we just hear more of it. It's always ongoing. We're always hearing about it. So I'm just thinking maybe one of these days, it'll come to an end that we'll hear about the whole Dwight Howard situation. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. We constantly hear about the Tigers and their situation, and they're improving. Looks like they've got a good chance to make the playoffs and get to the playoffs. So we'll hear that, and maybe they'll win their division. Who knows? But we hear a lot of things. That's the one thing. Maybe we should just discuss and hear from you. Why are we such lovers of sports? You know, of all sports. I mean, so many big college sports fans out there. You know, and I've talked, and I know you talk with folks. A lot of us talk with different people. Why do we love sports so much? What's the big deal about sports in college sports? What's really the big deal? The other thing that's even a bigger deal is, why do we just have this fascination about people playing sports for free? I mean, this so-called amateur rule, we really embraced people that we supposedly we believe play sports for nothing, just play it for the love of the school or just for the love of their teammates or something. We've got a big love affair with playing sports for free in this country. Why do we do that? Why do we love so much? I know it's been around since the 1900s when amateur sports was invented, and it was called, even though a lot of other people have always made a ton of money off the amateur sports, we always prefer and look at it more so the athletes playing these sports for nothing. Well, why do we do that? Why do we care so much about people playing a sport for nothing? Aaron, can you answer that question? Why do we care so much that our athletes play sports for nothing?
That's a good question. I don't have an answer for that. I mean, I'm sure there's, you know, if you polled 20 people, you could get 20 different answers. You know, for myself, frankly, I don't have an answer. I think it's a combination probably of just, I don't know, you know, you grow up, you know, yeah, watching the TV, you know, a lot of things, the way you turn out in life is how you you grew up in certain things. You know, you grew up loving baseball because, you know, you probably watched as a young kid that maybe you don't even remember watching it, but you were watching it, and suddenly you just start liking it, and then you start playing it. So, you know, I think this same thing could be said for anyone who's interested in a sport, like you just said, that, you know, where people are playing it for free for the love of the game, but the people like it because they, you know, it's entertainment, it's a social gathering, it's you know, they've liked it since they've been a kid because that's what they've, that's all they know, you know, they don't know any better. So, you know, I think, but you know, other people, they're probably going to have different reasons. You know, maybe some people like it for the fantasy football, who knows. So I think there's a multitude of answers, and I think everyone would probably have a different answer.
Yes, you know, it's a sport like golf, for example. A lot of people love the sport of golf. Well, a lot of people that play golf, basically play it, you know, they try to get good enough to make the pro tour so they can make a lot of money on that. I mean, that, what other reason are you going to play pro golf except, you know, you have a chance to make a ton of money. If you can become one of the best 150 golfers in the world, you'll be on the pro tour. You have a chance to make a lot of money. And that's one thing when we look at how to differentiate that. How do we differentiate, for example, a kid just playing college golf, but if he's got a chance to play a pro, be a pro, he's going to leave that college in a heartbeat in a minute to go with his chance and make his chance to play pro golf. That's just one sport, for example. We see all the team sports, you'll leave college early to go a chance to make more money. We just have so much, you know, invested in these games. Why do we as a public, you think, Aaron, have so much invested in these games? Why do we just love them so much?
Well, again, why we love them so much, I don't know. I mean, is it because they are fed so much money and we're attracted to people with power and money? Maybe. That could be one thing. You know, well, why do people watch Jersey Shore, you know? I don't know.
Like with Tom Gortz, for example, why'd he buy the Pistons? I mean, when you got a ton of money, you know, a lot of times your pro teams aren't going to make that much money. I mean, most pro teams, as we look at, they don't make as much money. So a few of them do make a lot of money, but you've got to spend money to make money. That's an old saying that's previously true. You have to spend a lot of money to make a lot of money. And that's one thing about sports is, you know, if you want to own a team, you got to spend a lot of money. I wouldn't want to own a team, you know, unless you want to get a pro football team. Pro football teams, it used to be a license to print money, even though nowadays, you know, it's a little bit harder to make money in pro football.
Yeah. You definitely got to spend money to make money, and you're right. I mean, it's not like they're just racking in a crap ton of money, you know, on the professional end of stuff. But I really don't know why people are attracted to, you know, all these sports where people are making you know, lots of money. But it one thing I think I see a lot is people complain that sports athletes make too much money, which,
yes,
you know,
they do.
I've said that myself, but at the same time, I'm sitting there in front of the TV or sitting there at the game supporting them, but then I'm complaining that they're making too much money, but I'm also supporting them. So I'm not sure, you know, if we didn't support them, I guess they probably wouldn't be making as much money. So,
but the thing is, we never complain about how much the owners are making and what
they
are making. We never do that, but we always complain about what the athletes are getting, and usually the athletes are getting chump change.
Yes, that is true. The owners do make a lot of money, and if you think about, you know, I don't know if there's ever been a documentary done about what their daily, you know, what they do on a daily basis year in and year out. I would probably love to see how many times they go on vacation, how many times, you know, when it's the off season, you know, for owners, it's usually, you know, working on trades, working on, you know, signings and that kind of stuff. But there's probably a lot of time where they're not doing a whole lot and they're getting a lot of money not to do, a whole lot simply because, you know, we as the store, I guess, so-called or customers, you know, are feeding them for an $8 hot dog or $8 adult beverage. Or, well, I guess it would probably be double that price. But we continue to go. I don't think it's ever going to go away. It's fun entertainment. So I think sometimes we look for an answer as to why, but I think sometimes too, not everything needs an answer. And I think this is one of those things where, sure, you could come up with an answer, but the reality is it's just human nature. It's just we just go.
Yes, and maybe that's part of the problem. I mean, fans often, I know I've heard a ton of complaints over the years. Don't hear as many as I used to, in all honesty. Complaints about prices and the games that they get for the price that they have, whether it's football or basketball. I say, well, if you don't like it, just don't go. You know, you don't have to pay. You don't have to go to a football game. You don't have to go to a basketball game. You don't have to go to a hockey match. If you don't like what they're charging, it's very easy. Just don't go, and you don't have to pay it. You don't have to pay for parking and everything else. You know, all the cost around it. But I think we love to complain, basically, because we still complain and we still go. So maybe it's just a thing that we really love to complain.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I mean, my girlfriend likes to complain, so that's all the same. But luckily, she's not listening. You're right. I think people do like to complain, but when you're talking about prices, I think it's also, the prices are high, sure, but all the owners are concerned about is making sure that they got enough people coming in.
Sure.
Well, you know, if they still have high prices, they still got people coming in. Well, that's what they want, and if they continue to raise prices and people are still coming in,
yes. Hey,
all the better for them. So when people complain about them lowering prices, which, we've seen actually Tiger Stadium has done some good ticket deals. They've also done some, dollar hot dog days, I think, too, as well. So, they've run some those kind of like specials, but I think the average middle-class American, I think, is complaining more probably because it's becoming too expensive just to go have some fun entertainment, take your family to the game. You know, it used to be, I'm sure, but, probably even when you remember, you could go to the ballpark for pretty cheap.
Right, you could.
Mm-hmm. But nowadays, like you said, you have to pay for parking. You know, the tickets are rather expensive if you want to get a drink, even a hot dog. If you got a family of four, that adds up. I mean, it's not like you can just, unless you're making a lot of money, it's not like you can just go once a week. I mean, you have to plan your life around that stuff. So.
Yes, and one thing that's really gone up that's really has shocked me over the years, and I know when I went down to a Tiger game, for example, the price of parking has really went up over the years. You used to go and park at a game for $5 would be the, now it's $20 or more to get a really prime parking spot to go to a baseball game. And yet people are they're getting mad, but they still go and they pay that $20 to park. If the closer you get, you get a good spot. The more you pay, I should say, you get a good parking spot. That's the way it is these days. Well, hey, I want to thank you all for listening today. Thank you for calling. I invite you to come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up and talk sports. That was Aaron Young you heard talking, and Aaron and I have been talking, and you can come back and join Aaron and I tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR. You've been listening to radio station, Michigan State University radio station, WKAR from East Lansing. We come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here. So come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR. Have yourself a very safe and pleasant evening. I'll see you tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.